Introduction to the Mahayana Text. Sharp Weapon Wheel. Part 3. The integrity of the field is primordial. Only from the confused position of duality does the activity of integrating seem meaningful. The issue is not to try and integrate duality into non-duality. There is no separation. The issue is to desist from the unnecessary and unhelpful arousal which drives the activity of ignoring, forgetting, splitting, and reifying. Ending unnecessary effort is the direct path to liberation. When the soul ground is obvious, there is no separate self to provoke or be provoked, to vex or to suffer vexation. All problems are self-liberating in the purity of their own ground. Illusion dissolves like a rainbow in the sky, revealing that there are no real obstacles or problems to be worked on. As the Dharmapada says, verse 170, "Look upon the world as a bubble. Look upon it as a mirage. One who looks thus upon the world cannot be seen by Yama, the king of death." This is largely implicit in this text, Sharp Weapon Wheel, where the explicit focus is on grasping at the ego, the specific form of entity that we take to be the self-existing basis of our sense of self. I exist. I am someone. I am me and not anybody else. Cutting this identification frees the mind from the obscuring veil of being taken to be a self. Now, the mind, in being awakened to its own intrinsic clarity, can see that all entities are inherently without inherent self-identity. However, such clarity is unavailable as long as grasping at a self is further intensified by privileging myself, seeing myself as the most important self in the world. This self-cherishing, Daiche, is our familiar guiding self-preoccupation, the foreclosure that shuts out the vitality of the presence of others. Indeed, others are now recruited only for the value they have in maintaining our own sense of specialness and the importance of our desires, projects, status, and so on. Love of self has us each living in our own small world, tidying up our ego garden, planting our favourite pretty flowers, and discarding what we take to be weeds. Life after life can be spent in this way, accumulating the negative karma of not experiencing other beings as an end in themselves, rich in their own value. Rather, we see them as a means to fulfilling our own ends, and this diminished regard for them allows us to continue in the selfish fantasy of our own supremacy. It is this self-cherishing that is the explicit focus of this text. Seeing the interconnectedness of all that occurs heals the estrangement experienced by the isolated ego. How sad it is that the very effort to cherish our ego and make it special maintains the pain-inducing delusion of its separate existence and unique value. Not only have all sentient beings been our kind mothers in previous lives, but they are inseparably part of the dependent origination that we too are part of. Moreover, we share our inseparability from emptiness and our inalienable Buddha potential. With all of this being the case, how could any sentient being not be precious to us? If, however, I truly want to help all beings, I must free my mind from negative tendencies of thought, emotion, speech, and activity. I must also develop positive qualities that will enable me to help others and will also inspire confidence in them as to my usefulness and reliability. This is why I will commit myself to mind training, to adopting the good, and abandoning the bad. All the Buddhas have done this, hence the Tibetan term for Buddha, Sangye. Sang indicates purified, and Gye, vast in good qualities. The term for Bodhisattva, Jangchub Senpa, carries the same connotation. A heroic being committed to purifying limitations, Jang, and to becoming complete in all aspects of compassion, Chub. Following in their path, I will develop the unflinching honesty of seeing my faults and limitations. Indulging these faults, I deceive myself and others in the process. Therefore, I will separate the clarity of my mind from the confusion that arises in it. As my energy is disconnected from identification with the negative, it is freed up to be directed towards the positive, towards all that benefits sentient beings. In the title of the text, Sharp Weapon Wheel, sharp weapon refers to ignorance, belief in duality and reification of self and other. This weapon cuts us off from the ground of our presence and traps us in a world of winning and losing, permeated by the five poisonous afflictions: mental obscuration, desire, aversion, jealousy and pride, and the ongoing disregarding of cause and effect. Wheel indicates the revolving water wheel or prayer wheel, where a bucket or an inscription is carried away and then carried back. When cause and effect are ignored, there is a sense that one can get away with it if one is not found out in the here and now. But the teachings on karma point out that the consequences of an action often manifests long after the action has been completed. What goes around comes around. The great beauty of this profound text is the way it shows that we, like the peacock, can learn to thrive on the poison that is toxic for the ego. The ego self seeks to do as it pleases, but has to face the ripening of karmic consequences. However, these consequences and their manifestation as life in the six realms of samsara, with repeated encounters with Yama, the Lord of Death, also rest on cause and effect. When the absence of inherent existence in beings and phenomena is awakened to, the cause of samsara, ignorance and attachment, is destroyed. Hence, seeing that cause and effect give rise to all conditioned phenomena, and that they therefore lack inherent existence, the basis of karmic cause and effect is dissolved. Thus, the sharp weapon of karma that torments the ego is itself destroyed by the sharper weapon of wisdom, which ends the delusion of the ego and its associated karmic production, thus ending the delusion of samsara. Only awareness, inseparable from emptiness, is free of karma. And therefore, one should take great care until one is fully awakened to ground openness. Our impulses to negative actions are usually infused with the five poisonous afflictions. They are said to be poisonous as they lead us to sin and thereby to suffering. Sin is a term that is hardly used these days, but it is useful in highlighting the toxicity of negative action of body, voice, and mind. In the Tibetan language, the words for scorpion, for poison, and for the toxicity of negative actions are very similar. As verse 1 of the Dhammapada points out, our mind is our greatest source of benefit, but it is also our greatest source of harm. Mind is the forerunner of all things. Mind is the chief, and they are mind-made. If, with an impure mind, one speaks and acts, then misery follows, just as the cartwheel follows the ox. Karmic consequence is powerful and confusing and difficult to alleviate, and so we must take care in everything we do if we are to benefit others and avoid poisoning the world. Karma means activity which has subsequent consequences, as well as immediate outcomes. It is generated when someone is doing something, somewhere, to someone else, with body, speech or mind, or with all three. There are four aspects to this. The first is the ground or basis, which is duality. The belief in a separate self as my true identity puts me into a potentially competitive relation with others who are not me. This belief and mode of experience situates me as separate from, yet connected to, others. I wish to gain advantage and to avoid suffering and disadvantage. My focus can be on my benefit alone or on the benefit of others, generating respectively negative or positive consequences. With this as my basis, I form an intention. I am going to do something. This could be kind or cruel, selfish or altruistic. The key point is that the intention confirms me as the actor, the one who makes things happen. I am the doer of the deed. The third aspect is the action itself. I am now carrying out my intention. I am conscious of helping or harming. This is what I am doing. The fourth aspect is the conclusion, in which I review what I have done and feel satisfied or not with having fulfilled my intention. When all four aspects or factors are present and in harmony, then not only is there the immediate outcome of the action, but the basis is laid for consequences to arise at a later stage, usually when I've forgotten about the causal connection. Therefore, as long as we are under the power of duality, we have to strive to be mindful of what we do and face up to the deviousness of our own behaviour. We need to recognise that we have a lot to expiate, for as long as we take our self-serving activity to be normal, we bind ourselves further into confusion. We need to make use of the potency of the four corrective purifying factors. The first is the potency of the field of activity. Visualizing Vajrasattva in front of us, connected with us, available to us. He is the presence of the unchanging purity of our own Buddha potential. And he has the power to remove all adventitious stains. Secondly, we employ the potency of the effective application of the antidotes. We heighten our regret at our confused activity and increase our faith in the cleansing and healing power of the indestructible Buddha mind. Thirdly, we use the potency of complete renunciation. Although selfish behavior can seem tempting, as if it offers true value, with our understanding of karma, we need to be clear that the temporary gain arising from putting oneself first will lead to long-term suffering. Self-indulgence is to be renounced in favour of working for the benefit of others. The fourth potency is that of abandoning the return to error. This requires a strong commitment to changing one's tendencies and behaviour, and to sustaining the effort that this will require. On a more profound level, it requires us to directly awaken to the truth of emptiness, so that the illusory quality of all temptations and provocations becomes obvious. However, it is difficult to directly and immediately see the illusory quality of phenomena, since the impact of a situation reaches us before we're able to work out what is going on. The impact provokes and evokes responses in us, which we and others may well have difficulty in understanding. Even among human beings, our responses to what we take to be seemingly the same situation can be very different. Our perceptions, our interpretations, and our mobilizations depend on the unique specificity of the factors constituting each of us in each situation. Incidents which provoke me to anger might leave you with indifference. You then think I'm making a fuss about nothing, while I feel you willfully misunderstand the situation. Confusion, hurt, and misunderstanding are readily available in human relationships. We need to move beyond the ceaseless pulsation of blaming self, blaming others. End of part 3 from the book Finding Freedom, introduced and translated by James Lowe. Part 3 of 5 parts, read by Wendy, April 2024.